BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
To Jill Scott, this lanky figure, looking towards Enioluco. Enioluco in towards the penalty area, and England equalise. Enioluco with England's first attack of the game.
Enioluco is a decorated former footballer who scored 33 goals for England. Having spent so many years of her life watching and playing football, she's now also a successful pundit. Back in January, she gave analysis on a men's FA Cup match.
The show went fine. There was no issues whatsoever. The next morning, I get a call from the producer at ITV saying, "Are you okay?" I said, "Well, what do you mean? I'm fine." And he said, "There's a lot of stuff on social media about last night." I said, "What do you mean? What happened?" And he said, "You know, Joey Barton has been spouting off about you and Lucy, and he says something that we think is just horrific."
After the show, Joey Barton, also a former footballer, had begun posting on X, including comparing her and another female pundit, Lucy Ward, to serial killers Fred and Rose West. This unleashed a wave of hate from other social media users.
Joey Barton speaking for every footballing man. No one wants to know what a woman's got to say.
They seemed to be emboldened by the posts and began sending abusive messages.
I like putting a few comments on there. A lot of it I try and do tongue-in-cheek. You know, it's just an easy target, I suppose. So then you put on a little bit of innuendo or a little bit of baiting to someone, you might get a response.
All these people are saying the most horrific things about you, and actually it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I'm going to say something even worse. So it's like a competition of how bad it can get.
I'm Mariana Spring, the BBC's disinformation and social media correspondent. And in this series, Radio 4's Why Do You Hate Me?, I'm investigating extraordinary cases of online hate. I get a lot of messages. Many are from people who want to raise the alarm about content that could cause harm to others. My inbox was inundated with messages about the vitriol being directed at Enioluco. So in this episode, I'm entering the world of the troll.
Bit of relaxation at night, keeps the brain active. I've got my views. Whether it's right or wrong, I still think I'm right.
As well as the trolled.
Online abuse from somebody who has millions of followers feels like the world is caving in on you.
Investigating misogynistic and racist hate on social media. Before hearing about the impact these messages have had, I want to first get to know Ennie and learn more about her football journey.
Football for me is my earliest memory. You know, I've been obsessed with football probably since the age of 4. I grew up in Birmingham, my local estate, playing football.
When she was growing up, Ennie gave the boys in her area a run for their money.
It was my quickest way of sort of being one of the cool kids on the estate. I happened to be the only girl, and I was surrounded by boys, and I realised I was probably better than all the boys.
I was just about to say,
and they used to tell me actually that I was better than them. So that was early on. Football was such a positive influence in my life, gave me confidence, made me feel like I belonged to something. And for me, I couldn't really aspire to be a professional footballer because I couldn't see it. It wasn't on TV. And then the closest role models, really, that I had were the Williams sisters. So I just played for fun. I played in my school team. I played in a local team.
Some of the boys she played with locally went on to train with professional clubs. But recognising there weren't many similar opportunities for girls, Ennie decided to pursue other interests and went on to study law.
Whilst I was at university, that's when women's football started to really start growing. 2012 Olympics really was the sort of watermark change where women's football opened the Olympics, and the perception of the women's game, I think, changed, and that's when the professionalisation started.
She eventually played for Chelsea.
The home side was still recovering from that setback when the advantage was doubled. A swift Chelsea counter-attack sent Enioluco clear, and the England striker clinically found the bottom corner.
And then England, before retiring in 2020.
I felt like I was on the cusp of like a generational change where I didn't get to really aspire in that way, but now I'm seeing the next generation be able to do that, so that always makes me really happy.
Her law training meant she gravitated towards public speaking.
I found myself in the England team becoming a bit of a spokesperson for the team, just on different issues. And then gradually I got the opportunity to go on Match of the Day too in 2014, so 10 years ago now.
England and Chelsea's Eni Aluko. We want you to get involved as well.
I think it depends on club philosophy as well. I mean, you know, I watched the Liverpool-Everton game yesterday, and John Stones, outstanding. I remember being quite scared, actually, of the opportunity. But I also knew that if I was to do it well, all of a sudden people go, oh, girls know how to talk about football, girls understand football. So there was a big opportunity there. Just like football, you know, if you perform on the pitch, the manager and the coach is going to pick you again.
Fast forward 10 years, and Eni has an established broadcasting career. But her success is accompanied by this parallel world of online abuse. The day after Joey Barton began his attack, she says it was hard to avoid the conversation echoing across the internet.
Now, I'm off Twitter and X. I have been for a long time, so I didn't see any of it. But then you only had to Google me, and then everything was being written about by the mainstream press. So then I started to get quite anxious, because you get that sort of feeling of being in a fishbowl, that everybody is sort of thinking, talking about you and reading the horrific stuff that's been said about you. And I just didn't get it. I mean, live TV is live TV. Lots of things can go wrong. We all thought it was a good show. So to see such a horrific statement being said just didn't make sense to me.
Joey Barton posted multiple times about Eni, moving on from comparisons to serial killers, to dictators, Pol Pot and Stalin. Eni's employer issued a statement condemning the abuse, but Barton continued to post, including about her family.
And at this point, I'm like, what does this have to do with your view of my punditry? Why are you talking about where my family live? It's genuinely scary. And I think this is the problem sometimes with online. There's this gap between what you would do in real life if somebody was actively hurling abuse at you every day. The impact is the same, because I didn't want to leave my house. I'm going to disguise myself when I go and get milk from the supermarket. I mean, why should I have to do that, right? But this is the real life impact of online abuse, and nobody's stopping it. I have to say that I have had a lot of public support, and that does keep me going a lot. Same with family. But to a certain extent, we're all helpless. I'm a firm believer in consequences, deterrence. So when society sees the consequence to action and deterrence, it regulates behaviour.
Eni says she reported Barton's post to X, but nothing happened. The one avenue Eni believes could achieve some accountability is taking legal action, which can be expensive. She's now bringing a libel claim against Joey Barton. The posts from him activate lots of other users who target women in public life with angry comments. The messages they send often begin with a comment about football, but quickly move to personal attacks, frequently about gender and race.
What I don't understand is why people can't disagree without being racist or sexist or misogynistic. Right? You don't have to go past that line. You can disagree with me, it's fine, but disagree intelligently. But a lot of the discourse in football is just so base, frankly, that it's just like, resort to personal insults if we don't agree. That's the part of it that I just don't want to accept as a given.
When it comes to the racist and the misogynistic abuse, how do you deal with the different types?
It's a great question, because I'm at that intersectionality of being a woman and being black, right? So it's sort of a double whammy. So I think for me, it's really a reflection of where we are in terms of the world order of society, right? So there's a lot of people that can't accept the reality that the meritocracy now includes many different people. Women, people of colour, black people, trans, people from the LGBTQ community. So what that comes with is a lot of people that go, well, that person can't possibly be competent because they're not part of my patriarchal world order. And then they use mistakes to then confirm that bias. It's an attempt to really project inferiority on women and on black people. Because it's not just specific to football, right? This is a generic experience. You might have a black woman in a position of power and influence. The minute she gets something wrong, it confirms that she was never meant to be there in the first place.
The double whammy Eni references, being systematically targeted for being a woman and being black, is something that's very common. I've come across it many times when reporting on online abuse. There are networks of accounts on social media that focus almost entirely on opposition to feminism and promote hypermasculinity and misogyny. This is often referred to as the manosphere. At the more organised end, the manosphere includes communities like men's rights groups and incels, a subculture who define themselves as unable to get a sexual partner despite desiring one. Crucially, they blame women for that. It can also be called the black manosphere or misogynoir when accounts promote similar ideas but target black women specifically.
I've been looking into these accounts and these different people who've been sending these kinds of messages. What would you want to know about them?
Well, honestly, like, I've consistently realised that you can't have that level of hate without hating yourself, without being deeply unhappy, without having something that makes you so angry that you have to get it out of your system. If I don't like a pundit on TV, I switch it off. I change the channel. You know, I don't write 10 tweets about it. You know, in a way, I think they need help.
For Eni, it's X that has been the main conduit for hate. It's now possible to buy a blue tick, which is the platform's way of saying you are a verified user. This then means the algorithms promote your content more than unverified users. Joey Barton has a blue tick, and therefore his posts are given more prominence. They also tend to get more coverage by the media.
This is a societal issue where we have a platform that is allowing people who are not okay to just vomit their hatred unchecked. And then on top of that, I think there is an intention to monetize and incite more hatred to promote a podcast, which I think is probably the most sinister thing.
Eni is referring to Joey Barton's podcast, but she believes he's not the only media figure targeting women online to grow their profile. Influencer Andrew Tate, for example, has racked up millions of views and followers by promoting a lavish lifestyle and, in his case, violence against women.
You know, in the same way when I was growing up, there was this sort of like gangster glorification of like the Godfather, and that was dangerous, I think, in terms of like drug dealing. And I see now there's a glorification of men that hate women. And like, if they're rich, cool, that's cool. That's really dangerous.
I track some of the accounts that began abusing Eni after Joey Barton's posts. I often refer to these people as the shock troops, seemingly anonymous profiles sending out abusive messages to the person targeted by the influencer. I want to find out firsthand what drives someone to do this. I message about a dozen accounts and strike up conversation with a few of them. The majority of them are men. One person behind an anonymous account agrees to speak to me in person. He asks me and my team to meet him in a car park near where he works. When we arrive, I catch sight of someone waving from their car. They signal for us to follow them. Eventually, we arrive at a farm and park up on a gravel forecourt in front of a large outhouse.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
This is Ben.
Right. This is Emma.
Hi, Emma. Hello. Hi, how's it going?
Good. We're calling him James, which isn't his real name. He's a man in his early 60s, and he tells me he moved from London to this area over a decade ago. He leads us through a dark, slightly damp, carpeted corridor to a small room where he says we can speak, undisturbed.
How would you describe yourself if someone said, what are you like as a person?
Very easygoing, you know, always into sport. Football's been my life. It's hard to explain to you. Football is, in my era, was the life. You know, you'd miss weddings for it. You wouldn't, you know, you'd get invitation to a wedding, you wouldn't go to the day, you'd go to the evening only.
Because you had to play football?
Because you had to play football, or you were going to watch Chelsea, so...
Like, what is it about football that's made it such a big part of your life?
I think it's a man thing, really, and that's not... being sexist, it is a man thing. It's I'd say 8 out of 10 men, you know, when they turn up to work on a Monday morning, we'll all talk about football. And it's part and parcel of life for the men. You know, people go overseas and don't come back. They've gone out to watch Liverpool and haven't come back because, you know, they found a girl and they're running a bar now. It's life, football.
James tells me he started using social media in lockdown. He decided to set up an account because he'd seen on sports sites, including the BBC, that players and pundits were using social media to air their views, and he wanted to join the conversation.
So I clicked myself in and went in to become a member of Twitter. And I follow it. I follow all different aspects of it. I suppose 60, 70% of it's the football, but I like to see what's going on around the world. So I like to put in a few comments on there. Bit of relaxation at night. Keeps your brain active, and that's how I use it. It's just human nature, I suppose. If you see something you don't really like, you might rebel against it. You think, I'm not having that. So then you put on a little bit of innuendo or a little bit of baiting to someone, you might get a response.
Having looked through James's account, I can see that he posts about football a lot. He's not at the most extreme end of the users I've looked into, and he doesn't appear to be in any of the more organised groups that target women. But he does post comments and retweet content, some of which is racist and specifically critical of women.
What do your family think about your social media, your kids?
Missus not really worried. The oldest one says, just be careful. Youngest one's not happy because he thinks I'm on it all the time, but I'm not. You know, I need to say stop liking things, but he's on his phone 24/7.
What is it he worries about?
I don't know, saying the wrong thing on there because I'm quite opinionated and it could you know, come back to me.
James tells me his son had called him a troll.
Yeah, and I didn't know what a troll was. He said, you're trolling. And I said, oh, what's a troll? Then I found out and I said, no, I'm not. He said, you are. But then I have sort of, since you mentioned that, the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks, I have sort of not gone on it so much because I feel as if I don't want to be labelled as a troll, which I still don't really know what a troll means. But it's just someone who's, how I can put it, is maybe obsessed with a certain person or an element of something that's happening.
On Twitter, you don't use your name, you don't use a picture.
No.
Why is that?
I wouldn't know how to upload a picture anyway. So I'm not hiding nothing.
Why don't you use your name?
A lot of people don't use their name on it. They put a lot of emblems. They put a British Bulldog or a Union Jack or they put a Palestine flag or whatever it is. I think there's a lot of people abbreviate what they put on there, you know, for their profiles.
Do you think it's different, though, if you did have your real name mm-hmm. and you did have a real photo of yourself? Mm-hmm. Do you think you'd think more about what you post?
Definitely. 100%.
Why?
Because you don't want someone, yeah, you just don't want no one. It's a personal thing, I suppose.
You're more accountable?
You're more accountable for your not so much your actions, for your comments, shall we say.
What is it about women's football and female commentators in particular that has bothered you so much?
Well, I just feel as if, it is a man's game. Us men don't really want women involved in men's football. So it just spoils the event. They've got their own game. Just stick to it. And I think that's why the resentment is on the women who have saturated the men's football.
It's not really true, though, is it?
Well, I think it is. The only thing that they'd listen to with a woman commentator is their negatives and their mistakes. Because no one can take a woman seriously commentating football.
You mentioned that word resentment. What is it about it that makes you feel resentful? What really is it?
Well, it's not the resentment. It's just that, you know, I've watched football now for, say, 50-odd years. It is ruining the game.
James's tweets sometimes take aim at women from different areas of public life, not just football. For example, he wrote this about politician Diane Abbott, quote, give the football focus job to Enya Luko, Karen Carnage and Diane Abbott. It would be the best comedy show on TV.
Do you think it kind of extends beyond football?
No, because we're married to them. We've got kids with them.
But when they're not just wives or mums, you know, when they're other things like politicians or journalists, or do you feel about women sort of in other positions?
No.
Just football?
That's my opinion, yeah. No one wants to know what a woman's got to say. You know, please don't think I'm anti-women because I'm not. I don't feel threatened. I don't, you know, it's just an easy target, I suppose, if you're looking at it that way.
Coming on to Joey Barton, mm-hmm. Do you remember seeing Joey Barton's kind of recent tweets about
female commentators.
Yeah.
What was your kind of initial reaction to
this? It's correct. They can't see what a man can see because they've only played, in my eyes, 14-year-old, 15-year-old standard football, schoolboy football. They've been slung in the deep end. You know, you're a journalist. I bet it's taken you years to be a journalist to get where you are now. Am I correct?
Probably the same as, you know, any of the female commentators, though.
What?
You know, they're people who've played... They haven't taken a week, though. They're people who played football, you know, played football at a time when it was really hard to play football as a woman. These women have played more football than a 14-year-old boy.
No. You might disagree, you might agree with me, but I bet I'm not far off.
When it comes to... So Joey Barton obviously took aim at specific commentators.
Yeah.
One of them was Enya Luko. Mm-hmm. What was your kind of reaction to that? Because she then experienced a huge wave of online abuse of that tweet.
But she made so many mistakes online. Nothing to do with colour of her skin. She could be green, white, yellow. It doesn't matter. Because she makes too many mistakes on telly.
See, I think she's a really good speaker and I think she's a really good commentator. But I like the way she commentates. There are other people I don't like so much, whether they're male or female.
Mm-hmm.
The level of racist and misogynistic hate has been massive.
Right.
Loads of it. Do you think that's okay?
No. When you say misogynism, explain what you mean, what the abuse is there to explain.
So hating someone for being a woman. So deliberately saying things that are targeting them because they're a woman and saying that you don't like them on the basis that they are a woman. And in Enya's case, that they are a black woman. That's what I'm talking about.
No, well, I wouldn't, as I said just now, I wouldn't colour what colour of skin. She's out of her depth. And Joey Barton speaking for every footballing man in the country who paid the subscriptions to Sky.
But does she deserve the abuse, though? Do you know what I mean?
No, she definitely don't. You know, it's not hopefully he hasn't put anything racist on. Yeah.
After Joey Barton posted, James and others joined in. They are persistent, with many accounts posting multiple times with the same sentiment. Here's a flavour of the messages James aimed at Enya and other female pundits. Quote, if Alex Scott and Enya Luko were white, there's no way they would be on TV. And, quote, let's hope Enya Luko is hiding in the Gaza Strip. He posted after Enya had said she had to leave the country because she feared for her safety after the online abuse. At the time, Gaza was under heavy bombardment from Israeli forces and many people were being killed.
I guess the broader thing here is that we can like people or we can dislike people, but it's where it crosses into its sort of hate and abuse and mm-hmm. how we kind of stop that happening.
Sure.
And there are things like, you know, there was something I saw you tweeted. You went, oh, I hope Enya Luko, maybe she'll turn up in the Gaza Strip. Why did you tweet that?
Well, she said she's gone away. And
because she was getting trolled.
Well, I don't know what a troll meant. I said, yeah, if she's gone to the Gaza Strip, go out there. She wanted to get away from this country.
Why did you say that?
Don't know, I got sucked in, I suppose.
Do you regret that now?
Yeah, I do when you're highlighting it, but it's tongue-in-cheek. I look at it as a tongue-in-cheek. It's a little nibble for people to react.
Do you see, though, how if you were on the receiving end of that, it could be really hurtful?
It's not nice. It's not nice, and I agree with that. But hopefully, by what I've said there, you know, she wants to leave the country. She's frightened to go out the door. We'll go to, you know, if you're that worried about it, go out there. And I shouldn't have said it. But... You know, I'm thinking it's quite funny and it's quite, but it's not.
I think, though, it's hard, unless you're in it, to imagine actually what it feels like. Because it's, you know, unless you're actually subject to that volume of hate,
right.
I don't think you can probably really even begin to, like, sort of know what it feels like, I guess.
Correct. Yeah, but if I was that worried, you know, I'd just get rid of my Twitter account if it affected me that much, you know?
But I guess as well, it's, you know, it's the idea that you don't want to have to change how you behave. Like we should, you know, if you believe in freedom of expression, which mm-hmm. I'm sure you do and I
yeah.
do, people should be free to have their own opinions and to disagree with each other and to all exist on social media.
Sure.
It shouldn't be that certain people have to not be on Twitter because they can't say anything without it becoming just like too abusive.
Yeah, you're right. I agree with you.
It's hard.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. I won't do it again.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Since having that conversation with James, I've tracked his account and he doesn't seem to have posted anything offensive about Enya Luko. But he does continue to post about other female pundits, using aggressive rhetoric and gendered slurs. I contacted X about the points raised when investigating this case. they did not respond. The social media company says publicly it does not allow direct attacks on the basis of race or gender. It says, quote, "We are committed to combating abuse motivated by hatred, prejudice or intolerance." And, quote, "We believe that everyone has a voice and a right to use it." I also contacted Joey Barton, who did not respond to the points raised either. James is just one of many trolls, and Annie also one of many women, particularly black women, who endure these waves of abuse online.
To finish on a, with a view to a solution here, or going forward to the positives, what do you want to be different for women who do your job or any job in, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10 years' time?
I think it's twofold. So it's doing enough internal work on yourself so that this stuff doesn't get to you in a way that can really damage you. I've had to do that myself. You know, I'm 10 years in now and it's not getting any better in terms of the abuse. So I've really had to, you know, tell myself positive stories about myself, trust myself so that I can keep showing up for that young black girl who says, oh, I want to be like Annie Aluko. Because if I give up, we're taking a lot of steps back. If Kaz Kani gives up, if Alex Scott gives up, if Laura Woods gives up, we are at the front line. We're leading the way. I've done 2 shows since Joey Barton, and I was nervous. But the empowering feeling I felt after doing those shows was unbelievable. Because that's resilience, like being able to build that resilience of like, keep showing up, keep doing your thing, keep taking up space. Those are the things that I hope aren't as much of an issue for the next generation.
Speaking to Annie and the other people harmed in each of the extraordinary cases of online hate I've investigated for this series, I've been struck by how much we have in common. I, like them, feel unsafe as a result of the abuse I receive online, and I want to do something to stop it. When I've spoken in person to those behind the hate, they've taken at least some responsibility and expressed regret for what they've done. I've uncovered over and over again how hate is able to thrive on social media and how polarized online conversations have become. This tells me there's something core to the way these sites work, which is affecting the way we behave. The responsibility of the individual is only one part of this puzzle. Why do you hate me? Well, I don't think you would if you didn't use social media.
I love you.
Another.
Carolyn is 80, a wealthy widow. Dave is in his 50s, homeless, a former drug addict with a long criminal record. Their love affair causes a huge rift in Carolyn's family.
That's our mom. We're not going to let you just do that.
I'm Sue Mitchell, and this story unfolded in California on the street where I live.
Look at you brought into your house. He's a con artist, mother.
Is Dave a dangerous interloper or the tender carer he claims to be?
That's why I'm here.
Thank you.
Find out in Intrigue, Million Dollar Lover from BBC Radio 4. Listen on BBC Sounds.
If anything happens to you, I will just die.